We discuss TB and how LOSN can support you.
Pressure and stress that news of a positive test in a herd causes to a farmer and his family are the reason LRSN gets involved. And we can help by supporting the family through the process.
How to prepare for the reductions in farm support payments and what is meant by the phrase public goods.
Public goods are effectively natural capital. So just try and explain what natural capital is. That is air quality, soil quality, water, carbon and environment.
And what has all this bizarre weather meant for the crops this year?
I think the frosts have damaged the oilseed rape a little bit. I think the frosts came in the middle of the beginning, in the middle of the flowering.
Join me for LOSN Back on Track. Hi, I'm Ellie Codling with this month's episode of LOSN Back on Track. It has been a busy but exciting month with so many of you supporting our Mad May Marathon. It's been fantastic seeing all your social media posts and hearing about your gallant efforts to raise money for us. I'll bring you some highlights from some of the fundraisers later on in the show, and also in this episode, LOSN staff, volunteers and friends discuss some of the issues that our industry faces and how our charity can help farming and rural families who are facing tough times. As we know, farming always has challenges to face, and this spring is no exception. With the difficult weather conditions and yet more uncertainty facing our industry with the transition from the current basic payment scheme support to the environmental land management scheme on the horizon. But let's talk now about the issues our livestock and dairy farmers face when they're told they have an animal that has tested either positive or inconclusive from their regular bovine TB testing. With me to discuss TB and how LOSN can help is Alison Pratt, our PR and admin manager. Hi, Alison.
Hi, Ellie.
So you previously worked for the NFU in the East Midlands for 18 years as the regional communications advisor before you came to LRSN in 2018. So you know the background to TB and how it affects farming families.
Yes, Ali, that's right. As the NFU's communications advisor, it was part of my job to interpret the issues and challenges that our industry faces to help our local and regional media contacts and their audiences to understand what was happening in our farming world. Bovine TB, bovine tuberculosis to give it its full name, is a disease of cattle and other cloven-hoofed animals, but it also can affect and be carried by wildlife, including badgers, deer, and extremely rarely, us and our pets. What's been happening over the past few years is that, in line with the rest of the country, here in Lincolnshire, we've seen an increasing number of herds with positive or inconclusive tests. And although Lincolnshire is classed as a low-risk area, there's a very worrying rise in the number of herds affected.
So what happens when a farmer's herd is tested and a positive or inconclusive result is found?
Well, bovine TB control is governed by law. So all cattle that test positive, or they're called reactors, have to be slaughtered. And the whole herd then goes into a strict lockdown process until the animals are tested again 60 days later. And if they're clear, then normal life can continue. If not, the herd stays in lockdown until all the tests go clear. Cattle that are found to be inconclusive must be isolated and retested 60 days later. That's a simple way of putting it, but the pressure and stress that news of a positive test in a herd causes to a farmer and his family are the reason LRSN gets involved. And we can help by supporting the family through the process. The consequences of a positive test aren't just financial, of course. The emotional impact of losing animals can be enormous. Many adult animals will have been in the herd since birth. They'll represent not just a monetary value, but the farmer and his family will often have a very personal bond with them. For pedigree breeders, the animals will be valuable and will represent many generations of breeding on the farm.
Yeah, it's a huge impact, isn't it, on the family? And I guess the wider community, people have seen those animals in the fields, in their area. What about the vets as well?
Yes, our vets really are quite badly affected. They have to give the bad news, of course. Imagine having to tell the farmer that they're going to lose animals. One or perhaps many more animals have to be slaughtered and the whole herd put under restriction. And it's not their fault. It's the way the government restrictions, the government laws are in place. So the human costs of bovine TB are just as hard, if not harder, to bear as the financial and practical effects. And sadly, there are many more outbreaks in our herds. So LRSN's team of volunteers is here to help. just talking through the issues, having someone to share the load with who isn't connected, that really does help.
And have you, in the LOSN team, have you all been on any extra training regarding TB?
Yes, we organised a TB awareness training session in March. We had four excellent speakers to come and talk to our caseworkers and our volunteers, and really just to give them the background to make sure they understood all the issues, the practical issues, the legal issues, and of course the emotional issues that our farmers and their families are facing.
Thank you, Alison. Some really helpful and useful advice there. If you know of someone going through a TB issue, or perhaps they're worried about a test coming up and could do with a friendly voice and someone to listen, then LRSN can help. Our helpline is open from 8 till 8 every day of the year, and our team is ready, willing and able to help you get back on track. Now, in this part of the show, it finds us looking into a crystal ball, trying to understand what farming will look like and how our farming businesses will cope with the change from basic payment scheme to environmental land management scheme, which is due to start in 2024. My guests are Phil Dunn and James Walton from Brown & Co, and we're going to try and make sense of the maze that is DEFRA's plan for the future of farm support and what it may mean for Lincolnshire farmers and growers and the wider rural community. So Phil, can you give us some background on the changes that farmers are facing and what the implications are for farmers?
Yes, no problem, Ellie. Obviously, now we're in a post-Brexit world, and that will initiate the change from the Common Agricultural Policy to the British Agricultural Policy being the main support mechanism for UK agriculture. And that's based around the Ag Bill that was passed in November last year. So the mainstay of that support has always been a subsidy based on area and the area of land you farm. This is now moving over to a support based on the delivery of public goods. And this transition period that you've probably all heard about, running from 2021 to 2027. What's important to remember there is we've got subsidies guaranteed at the same levels, which is about 3.2 billion through to 2024. So roughly halfway through that transition period, which coincides with the end of the parliamentary term. Why is it so important? Well, subsidies form a large part of the profits of UK agriculture at the moment. Somewhere between 3 and 6 billion is the annual total income from food and farming. And as mentioned earlier, up to 3 billion of that, so all of it or half of it, depending on the year, could be from subsidies. So what are we going to do about it? Well, there's a number of things that will happen, and they'll be different for every business. But really, it's common economics. We've either got to get more for what we do, do it for less, do more of it, or do something different, or a combination of all of those. So there's lots of opportunities. I don't want to just be down about subsidies disappearing. We're going to get more opportunities to create new income streams through such as carbon. I think the industry will rationalise. I think it will specialise. I think there'll be areas where the environment becomes important and others where hardcore ag productivity continues. But a time of change, and we're going to get some help with that change. So there's the likes of the Farm Resilience Programme coming on stream to help farmers through that transition period.
Okay, great. So James, Phil has mentioned that there will be a phase reduction in farm support payments. What can farmers and growers do to prepare and to plan to offset the reductions?
Thank you, Ellie. That is rather the magic question, isn't it? I'm afraid every farmer has to start with assessing how the changes actually impact their business. So calculate how much less subsidy you are going to receive. Work out how it hits you in the pocket, the pounds, shillings and pence. Then you're going to have to consider alternative ways to raise revenue to replace that loss or reduce costs and become more efficient. I think the key thing for me is not to sulk about the loss or reduction in subsidy, but to take a positive step to fill the void.
It sounds as if there are some things that some farmers can do to get their businesses ready. But what about tenant farmers who don't own their land and buildings? So how can a family who rents their farm hope to invest in a diversified business or upgrade farm infrastructure or equipment in the same way that a farm that is owned will be able to do?
I think it's really, really important that just because you don't own your land, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't invest in improvements at all. I think that's a serious misconception that the industry actually has as a whole. You should, of course, ensure that you can either A, get a return on your investment during the term of your tenancy agreement, or, as we know, there's often larger investments required. And where these are required, establish a relationship with your landlord in writing as to how those improvements will be treated at the end of a tenancy. Agree those in writing and know where you stand. So I don't agree that being a tenant should preclude you from making investments. It's just the basis and how you make them and how you set things up with your landlords, which is crucially important.
DEFRA has just released their consultation on the lump sum payment exit scheme as part of the agricultural transition plan. Phil, can you tell us a bit more about this?
Yeah, certainly can. So really, as of the last couple of weeks, DEFRA have said, as part of the Ag Bill that cleared last year, they wanted a consultation doing on two elements. So a lump sum exit payment and the delinking of future payments. So they've now put those both out to consultation, and please partake in that consultation. It's all online. They're looking to conclude that through the summer of this year. So looking at the two elements, firstly, the lump sum exit payment, as it's known, that they're looking to try and find a way out for people who want to get out of farming. And it does mean that you have to give up land tenancies, whatever, and stop being part of the agricultural industry, which might be what some people want. So what they're offering there is they're incentivizing it with a payment based around a reference amount, which is based around the monies you've received in a reference period, which are all part of the consultation. And then they're looking to pay 2.35 times that reference amount as a one-off lump sum to exit the industry. I will add, though, that that is actually capped at £100,000. And in doing that, you then forego any future payments from the schemes and give up your entitlements, but you get the lump sum of money. And they're looking to implement that in the year 2022. So that's the exit payment. Then the second part of the consultation, which is the delinking of payments. So what they've said is from 2024 onwards, subject to this consultation, there'll be no need to have entitlements, occupy land, follow cross compliance rules, but they will delink the future payments. So from 2024 to the end of the transition period, 2027-28, that money then will just be paid irrespective of the land area you operate on. And it'll be based again on a qualifying period, a reference period, which they're consulting on. And that will determine the monies that you get and who gets those monies through the balance of the transition period.
Okay, so the timescales are quite short then, with it being published in October and then for implementation next year. That seems a very short window to make what are very big decisions. What should anyone consider opting for the exit payment plan to be thinking about now, would you suggest?
Obviously, they don't know at this stage what that reference period will be and how that will be calculated. For all the problems that emerge whenever you implement something retrospectively, so the amount of monies you've received in those reference periods will obviously vary if they average them out, if you've expanded or contracted or changed what you do. There's also then, once you get to that figure, it will be a lesser figure than you would have received if you continued in the scheme over the period, because you're obviously advancing that cash flow. But it might be that people want to get out and take the money. They also really need to consider, and again, it's part of the consultation, the taxation consequences of that one-off lump sum payment. Personally, I want it to work, and I want it to free up the opportunity for others, but the scale of the monies we're talking about, I don't see it as a retirement provision. It's a nice amount of money to help you exit. When you're looking at the delinking, again, that one is really critical. We've seen these sort of schemes before where future payments have been determined by reference periods and who farmed what in those reference periods. And obviously, the greater the distance or in time between the reference period and the time at which it implements gives rise to more complications. So mergers, scissions of businesses, partnership splits, company changes. It can all give rise to quite a bit of chaos. But again, I think we just want to get it in context. The value of these monies is not going to be huge. If that doesn't start till 2024, we're halfway through the transition then. So payments of around £40 an acre down to nil in the final year. So 3 years worth of an average of £20 an acre. Yeah, it's good money, but I don't think it's worth people falling out over.
A lot of change coming, isn't there? And you mentioned earlier, Phil, about public money for public goods, and it's a phrase we often hear associated with the changes in support. What are public goods, James? Are the changes to farm support only going to pay for environmental work?
There we go. Another series of buzzwords, public goods. I'm going to answer it with another buzzword, if that's all right. So public goods are effectively natural capital. So just try and explain what natural capital is. That is air quality, soil quality, water, carbon and environment. So you'll see that, you know, that natural capital is the buzzword linked to public goods. However, you asked me the question there about are the changes also going to support anything which isn't environmental? Yes, is the answer. But it's also very clear that the majority of the funds available and the emphasis will be on the environment by some degree. But just to be clear, there is going to be money available, as Phil said, for lump sum exits and delinking. There is also the other end of the spectrum. There is going to be a new entrance scheme as well. So that's dealing with the young and the old, hopefully. We've got the Farming Investment Fund, which assists with technology, infrastructure, now that could be reservoirs or buildings and productivity generally. There's going to be money available for skills and training. There will also be money going into something called the Farm Resilience Programme. So that could be helping farmers get to grips with perhaps what their costs of production are and some benchmarking and budgeting. And there will also be an Innovation and Research Programme and a Slurry Investment Scheme. So there are other things which are not environmentally focused. But just to repeat where I was before, I'm afraid the environment is the principal focus of the new scheme.
Well, thank you both so much for taking us through that whirlwind tour of a very complex subject. Thanks both so much. There is also a lot of information available to help businesses plan ahead and find out more about what DEFRA is proposing. For instance, both the NFU and the AHDB websites have comprehensive guidance for farm businesses. And of course, LOSN will be keeping a close eye on development and are here to support you and your family through challenging times. So our final guest this month is an LOSN supporter and farmer from near Bourne in the south of the county. Ben Atkinson joins me now, and we're going to talk about the weather, which, let's face it, has been one of the main subjects we've chatted about over the past year, even more than COVID, probably. So, hi, Ben. Thanks for joining me. Do you want to just take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about your farm?
Yeah, hi, Ellie. Yeah, thank you for inviting me along today. Yeah, as you said, we're farmers. We're a family farm in the south of the county. We're based in Dunsby, near just north of Bourne. We are mainly combinable crops growers, but we also have a small area of sugar beets. Our farmed area consists of our own land. We rent a few bits on short-term farm business tenancies. And then we also have a few contract farming agreements that we farm land for other people.
Okay, great. So this weather then, and this spring, have you ever known a year like it?
Weather, it's got to be the farmer's favourite topic, really.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, it's been a real challenge, but I think we're all getting used to weather events. We seem to sort of go straight from summer into winter and then winter into summer again. We seem to miss out autumn and spring. But no, it's definitely been a challenge. I think it was too wet for a start and then too dry and then too hot, and soon we'll be wanting some more rain again.
Yeah. So how do you see the yield shaping up for the arable farmers this summer?
Yeah, I think yield potential actually looks quite good at the moment. I think the rains in the middle of May came just in time. It was we were starting to look very droughty and desperate, but crops have definitely perked up since the rain.
Oh, that is good to know, isn't it? And how has the frost done for the sugar beets? You say you grow some.
Yeah, I don't think we've been too badly affected on the sugar beet. I know some farmers have been locally, but I think the frosts have damaged the oilseed rape a little bit. I think the frost came in the middle, beginning of the flowering. And I think it took some of the flower buds out, and we're seeing what are commonly termed as blind pods at the moment. So I think, it's probably hit oilseed rape yields a little bit more than sugar beet yields for us.
Oh, okay. And what about the winter barley? Do you think that's going to recover?
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I said, the rain came just in time. I think winter barleys, they looked quite backwards, really, going into spring. And with the dry weather just sat there. But I think the recent rains have given them a real boost.
Well, that's good, isn't it? So what's your thoughts on climate change then? Do you think it's well and truly here with us? And have you seen that the recent floods, the wet winters, the late frost, the dry spring weather, do you think that's a pattern for the future?
Yeah, I think we're definitely seeing climate change. And I think it all depends on the path of the jet stream, I think. We seem to get extremes. It's either prolonged periods of dry weather or prolonged periods of wet weather. And I think, we've perhaps got to learn how to cope with that.
Yeah, that's true. And with that in mind, how do you think farmers can build resilience into their cropping plans for the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think we've perhaps got to have a bit more flexibility in our cropping plans, where traditionally we've had a set rotation. I think we've got to have the ability to change quite quickly. And I mean, relating that to oilseed rape, we've actually got some fairly good looking crops of rape this year. But I think the only reason that is down to is because at the time of drilling, conditions were right. And I think if we come to August and the conditions aren't right, whether it be too wet or too dry, we probably won't take the risk of growing rape. So I think we've got to build in a bit of resilience and a bit of flexibility into our plans.
No, that's true. So another issue as well that we know is about the chemical active ingredients. It's always a big topic as well. The fungicides and the weed control products that we've relied on for many years aren't in our farmers' toolboxes anymore. So how do you see the future for plant health products? And are the days numbered for oilseed rape production?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, they definitely are in the scale that the crop has grown in the past. And, as I just said, I think if the conditions are right, it's perhaps worth the risk of trying to grow the crop. But if there's anything going against the crop that's going to hold it back, I think flea beetle and, I think the big active that we've lost are neonicotinoids. So it is a real risk, but we're losing many others. One of our big problems that was very evident last year was the loss of neonicotinoid seed dressings on sugar beet. Virus absolutely decimated our crop last year. We've tried something quite novel on the sugar beet this year. It was a few farmers on very light lands to stop the wind blow of the lands actually undersow barley underneath the sugar beet. And where they did this last year, it was seen that the virus wasn't as bad where there was undersown barley. So whether the virus-carrying aphids don't see the crop as a sugar beet crop and see it more as a barley crop. So this year we've undersown all the sugar beet with barley in the hope that it deters the aphid infection. I mean, with the loss of actives, I think we've all got to look at more culture controls, which we have done with blackgrass, with delayed drilling and different rotations. So I think as our chemical toolbox disappears, we've perhaps got to box a bit more clever and go back to more traditional methods and using cultural control.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. You already may have a possible solution there to help with the aphids.
Yeah, whether it works or not is a different matter. But we only put 50 kilograms a hectare of barley underneath. So the cost wasn't great, but we thought it was worth a go. And the evidence we saw last year was quite convincing.
Oh, great. Well, that's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ben, and chatting about one of our favourite subjects, the weather, and how it's going to impact on us.
Ellie, just going back onto the active ingredients thing, I think I don't want to get too political on this, but I think one big concern we've all got at the moment as British farmers is that politically we're still importing food that's produced to a lesser standard. And I think we're all very proud of our standards. And I don't think we want to see them drop. But actually, when we see recent deals done, the Australian and New Zealand deals, which will bring in food produced to a lower standard, it, you know, it's not a level playing field. I know the NFU are really fighting our corner, but yeah, we all need to champion British foods, and I think really champion the high standards. We are world leading farmers.
Farming world is changing at the moment, and that's what's great about LRSN is that they're always here to support and guide farmers through these changes that are coming, because it is a very different time ahead now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of our biggest challenges is the loss of direct subsidies. Over the next few years, we're going to see the direct subsidies phased out. And we mentioned earlier the weather resilience, but I think we've all got to, you know, make sure that we have really resilient businesses and look at other things we can do. I mean, for instance, we've just developed some barns into bed and breakfast and diversified into bed and breakfast, which I think it was a good year to do it with people not being able to go abroad.
Yes.
It seems we're getting a lot of bookings, which is brilliant. But yeah, I mean, I think we all need to look at our businesses with a fine tooth comb. And I know a lot of Lincolnshire farmers would have known the late and the great Dr. Chris Green. He once told me that we try and practice this in our business, but he said that the top performers are often marginally better at everything rather than significantly better at anything. Meaning that, you know, I think we've all got to look at what we do and the attention to detail going forward, and whether that's our cropping, whether that's our input purchasing, our selling. So I think resilience is a key word going forward, really.
Yeah, it definitely does seem that way, doesn't it? And it's just a timely reminder that any issues you come across, any support that you need, LRSN is there to help and guide farmers in Lincolnshire.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some great people out there. Yeah, I mean, whether it's talking to neighbouring farmers, your family, friends, you know, all LRSN, I think we're all in the same situation, and I think we can all help each other.
Thanks so much to Ben there for taking the time to talk to us and give us an insight in what's happening out in the fields for our Lincolnshire farmers right now. And remember, if you or someone you know needs help and support, our helpline is open from 8 till 8 every day of the year. Well, the Mad May Marathon is complete. I totted up 26 miles across the month with my just turned 2-year-old in tow for some of the journeys. I billed them as nature walks to her, but I think it was her first ever fundraiser, one of many more to come in her lifetime, I'm sure. We hope you've loved taking part, and thank you so much from all of us here at LRSN for the amazing amount of money raised. We heard from some of you across the month as well. Thanks for sending these in. Here's how you got on.
To support the Mad May Marathon, I decided that I was going to set myself 3 challenges. I was going to plant 26 trees, pick up 26 big bags of rubbish, and the big one, run 26 miles all in one go. That's why on the 15th of May, I was out there doing my marathon, and my goodness, it was hard work, but I had fantastic support from Charles in particular, but also from the whole of the LRSN team. It was an amazing experience.
Hello, the Mad May Marathon here in Springthorpe is progressing well. I'm still on target to hit 250 kilometres of running in May, on target to hit 200 kilometres of walking, and I'm well north of 100 kilometres of cycling. I'm having a very lovely time, although my legs are slightly painful at present. The highlight for me has very much been accompanying Alex Godfrey for the second half of his epic marathon a couple of weeks ago. Great effort by Alex, you know, really good, and so good to see so many people out and about.
My name's Isabel, and I've been raising money for the LRSN. I have been walking in 26 miles in May, and I've been really enjoying the Lincolnshire World sites with my mum.
Thanks to Alex, Charles and Isabel for sending those through to us. So, you're probably wondering, how much did it raise? Well, we're still totting up all the money, so I'll be able to bring you a grand total in our episode next month. I know, what a tease. Well, thanks so much for joining me. Don't forget, if you enjoy the podcast, please follow, rate and share it with your friends. It's available through all the major podcast apps as well as on our website. If any of what we have chatted about has resonated with you, here is a reminder of how you can get in touch. The helpline number is open 8 till 8 every day on this number, 0800 138 1710. You can contact us through the website at lrsn.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, just search for Lincolnshire Rural Support Network. And you can always donate through our Just Giving page, or why not choose LRSN as your business's chosen charity. We're also looking for a sponsor for the show, so if you would like to sponsor the podcast, then please do get in touch through one of those channels too. In our next episode, as well as bringing you the grand total for our Mad May Marathon, we will be chatting more about the funding for LRSN and fundraising in general. So until then, remember, you are not alone. LRSN will help you get back on track.